time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Folks, today on the Hot Topic segment of the Licking on Lending podcast, we're honored to have Marina Walsh, Vice President of Industry Analysis, Research, and Economics. That's a lot. In other words, in all that, she's really smart, very good observer of what's going on. She's with the Mortgage Bankers Association. And Marina, it is such an honor to have you here. So excited. So excited.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, so timely, especially following up with the Mike Awesome Pratt and Tony on your talking about economics. And I love Mike. He's just such a perfect contrast to my personality, because I'm always up there and out there a little bit, and he is just so calm. Yeah, interest rates. He could be saying interest rates be climbing to 13%, and you know, he would just say it, the same content, if interest rates are dropping down to zero. I mean, he's just the same, most consistent the way he lays it out. I love it. But we talked last week, and I kind of want to have this start out as a continuance of our talk with Mike. But before we even go there, for those who, I can't imagine, people don't know who you are because you're so instrumental there in what you do at the MBA, I want our audience to get to know you a bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what's your career path?
Sure. Thanks for having me. And I'm Vice President of Industry Analysis at MBA. I'm actually an MBA veteran on my 19th year, almost 20th year with Mortgage Bankers Association, always in research and economics, always looking at tracking profitability. A lot of the stuff that Andy tracks, I track as well. But my role has definitely changed over the years. When I had little ones, I was working part-time for MBA, but now I'm full-time. When I started at MBA, my little girl was 3 months old, and now she is a sophomore in college. So lots happened during this time. But going back to my career path, I was actually with Ernst & Young in their Federal Credit Advisory Services group, and we had some contracts with Ginnie Mae, worked very closely with HUD. And that's how I sort of got my foot into mortgage banking, was when I was with Ernst & Young in the 1990s. And from there, one of the managers I work with moved over to Mortgage Bankers Association, and soon thereafter, I followed her. So that's my story. During these, 19 years, I've worked for three chief economists, and Doug Duncan, who many people are familiar with. Yep, Doug. Yeah, Doug. And then Jay Brinkman, who's down in Texas in your neck of the woods. Yes. And Mike Fratton.
He's a part of our Ains. Jay is part of our Ainsworth Advisory Company. So we're
That's
thrilled to have
right.
you there working with.
Been Doug. Very fortunate to have some great, working for some great leaders in the industry.
And Mike is so good. I just love Mike. But the sense of humor, I mean, I get copied on some of the emails before between Doug and Jay, and their dry sense of humor is so funny. Jay had me in stitches the other day when we were talking about something. I'm only going to try to mix it in, but it was so hilarious. Classic Brinkman. But anyway, love what Mike's done in following up on the big shoes he's had to fill. And I'm so glad that the MBA has you there, Marina, because you do such a good job. And you really help us see the industry. We get excited more up and down about the industry, but you bring us exactly what's going on because of your research and the analysis that goes into it. So let's start there, especially knowing that you and Mike are going to be presenting here in just it feels like a week out. It's actually 2 weeks from today, I think you're actually presenting in New Orleans at the IMB conference. If you're not registered, folks, get out and get registered for this. If for no reason, just because of this one part of the presentation, there's many good things. We're doing a panel on Wednesday. I'll be on a panel on Wednesday. We're doing a breakout. Give it a shout out. Myself, along with Eddie Perez and Allison Johnston and Brenda Clem and myself, we're doing a presentation on sustaining growth through market cycles. So anyway, a lot of good content, but let's talk about what you and Mike are talking about. And he alluded to this in his interview last week. What about the cost to originate? Which direction is it going?
Well, I tell you, it's so nice to be presenting now as opposed to a year ago, because we have some positive news to give everybody in the industry. You know, 2019 started out abysmally for those that were around in the first quarter of 2019. That was one of the worst years for us. Profitability-wise, we were at a losses, I think, you know, when we surveyed 350 mortgage lenders, losses of 11 basis points. And these are all independent mortgage banks that have to be making money. And now we're at 74 basis points based on third quarter. We don't have fourth quarter data yet.
Profitability.
So, yeah. So, so that's profitability. Now, you asked specifically about costs. Cost is a big driver of that. You know, the question is how much is related to revenues and how much is related to cost. Most of that improvement is related to the cost to originate, of course, driven by fixed costs divided by more loans. But what I think is very significant is the just the degree of the loss. We've never seen such a big quarterly or the degree of the change. If you look at the first quarter, we were averaging for the nation $9,300 per loan in origination.
Got it
cost.
That high.
Yeah, $9,300, and now we're at $7,200. So big drop off, particularly between the first and second quarters of 2019. So my thinking is, of course, volume always plays a role in the cost to originate.
Right.
My question is, are all these technology investments coming to play? You know, it's hard to see the ROI in technology investment when you're in a depressed market, when there's no volume coming in. But it does say something. It's actually encouraging that in just one quarter we saw a $1,500 per loan drop. And then the next quarter, from the second quarter to third quarter, we saw another $500 per loan drop. So that's encouraging, especially at a time when loan balances keep going up. So, you know, we're paying our loan officers in basis points, so a big chunk of that goes to sales. But there's some efficiencies being garnered, which is encouraging.
That is really encouraging and significant. You know, the old saying, rising tide floats a lot of boats, and no question we've had that. But really interested in getting your perspective on your thoughts, because you do a lot of look a lot at technology. Alan talked a little about Blend now releasing a new app that further helps hopefully bring about some efficiencies. We have Finastra out there doing, was one of our sponsors, does a lot. What are you hearing is a contributing factor on this?
Yeah, well, in some of our other data from other sources, we go more into depth into tech costs. And among depositories, the average is up around $1,000 a loan. For independent mortgage companies, it's around $400 per loan. That doesn't necessarily mean that depositories are investing in technology and they're going to be more cutting edge than IMBs. It's also a function of the fact that a lot of these depositories have legacy systems. They have systems that need to talk to their core retail banking system. So it could be more complicated. But whether you look at depositories or IMBs, the cost to originate for technology is rising. And so the goal would be to see improvement in terms of productivity, in terms of retail loans closed per loan officer, loans closed per non-producing FTE, which would include your fulfillment functions and your non-producing sales staff, apps per underwriter, we'd expect to see improvement. That has not come through in the data, but I can't wait to get a hold of the full 2019 data this spring. And by the way, for all of you out there, if you aren't participating in our benchmarking studies, this is the time, because I'm data rich in May and June from all of our studies that take place during the spring. And so I'll feel a lot better presenting in May and June. But in general, you know, a good portion with independent mortgage companies, about 58% of those costs are going to sales. You asked specifically about technology. Technology counts for about 5% of the total cost to originate. And then fulfillment's about 23%, and the rest is corporate and production support functions.
Okay, I'm going to get around to our regulars. We'll start with Allison. We're on the topic of technology. Then I get to Alice and Andy. Andy, we're not leaving you at the last. It's just because I know you've got so many questions you're going to ask, ask our guest here just a bit. Oh, Andy, and a doctor now. So anyway, yeah, let's start with you, Alan. Technology, any questions you have for Marina?
Yeah, number one, I'm glad to hear that you're data rich. I think that is super exciting. I think a lot of folks are actually looking at the back-end process, right? When you talk about technologies only accounted for about 5% or whatever that number was, it's probably more or it hasn't been reported well enough. I think lenders are still learning how technology impacts their organization.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think it's safe to say we as an industry are really focused on how to move technology and the workflow process much faster, right? For example, when you're looking at an underwriter, how many loans can an underwriter look at per day compared to when it was all manual? How do we automate the things an underwriter has to look at? And how do we help identify risks up front? When you start looking at all those things, and we've been talking about it for so long, when we actually start doing it and we can measure it, I think your numbers will shift a little bit. So I think that's positive. But I was just curious if those are some of the things that you've been looking at.
Absolutely. In fact, I talked about productivity, but another metric that we look at in terms of efficiency is number of days from application to closing. And for that metric, we have seen improvement from 2016 to 2019. For refis, the average has gone from over 53 days down to 45 days. For purchases, it's gone from 49 days down to 44 days. So in terms of days from app to close, we are seeing that improvement. You know, I don't know to what extent we can link it all to technology, but that's certainly a factor.
It's really good. That's interesting. Great statistics. Folks, you can download this and go get those, so just keep right on listening. But fascinating information. Alice. Interesting, Andy was stepping over into your territory. What thoughts do you have as we talk to her about some of this?
So, Marina, I find it interesting about, you know, that big change in 2019, and maybe you addressed it and I didn't quite pick up on it, but how much of that is really just equated because it was refinances, and so the volume just came to people, right? You didn't have to necessarily go out and get it and drive more business, you've just got the benefit of the bump in the market.
Yeah.
So as we look ahead to 2020, you know, people are going to have to work hard now to get that business to come in the door. And, you know, kind of a second part of, do you expect that this is going to change in 2020 because we, you know, as of now, can't foresee a bump?
Yeah, so in terms of your first point, yes. I mean, every time we see any type of significant decline in cost to originate, it's driven by volume. But I guess my point is, since we've been doing this study in 2008 to the present, we haven't seen that much of a drop in origination costs in one quarter, even though we've had spikes along the way. We definitely had spikes in 2012, the second half of 2016, the second half of 2015. And so that's, I guess, what I'm focused on is, you're right, volume trumps everything, but are there other factors at play? Now, looking forward to 2020 and what we're seeing, I think the first half of the year, and Michael probably alluded to this last week, but the first half, there was enough capacity constraints in the second half of 2019 that I think a lot of volume is bleeding into 2020. I don't know, for those of you who follow our weekly application survey, we had pretty strong results last week, particularly among purchase. So purchase in every quarter is going to be better than what it was in 2019. If you look at our forecast for Q1, 2, 3, 4, and 2020, it's better than 2019. The difference is refinances are going to be higher on a quarter-over-quarter basis. For the first and second quarters of 2020, but then they're really going to start dropping off because interest rates have kind of leveled off and the forecast is for pretty flat interest rates. So we would assume that, you know, by the second half of the year, a lot of the folks who are going to refinance have refinanced. So it gets tougher in the third and fourth quarters with our overall quarterly volume lagging in 2020 what we saw in 2019 because of the drop in refis.
Yeah.
So it really is, again, the focus. We keep talking about going back to basics and going back to the purchase market. That's what we're gonna have to see. So inventories, what we talked about, new home sales. So hopefully the supply issue won't be, you know, hurting things too much in terms of purchase origination. So we still have purchase originations going up over the next 3 years, actually.
Good stuff. Really interesting. Alice, anything more?
No, that was great. I think it helps just to frame it for everyone because that's what we're anticipating. When you look at the numbers that in that forecast, that's what everyone's kind of bracing for. So you anticipate your marketing costs will go up and some other costs will go up, which will change that bottom line.
That's, and it could really potentially change again. Talking about concessions, you know, you only need one lender out there, and so we could see some pressures on the revenue side of the equation, too, in the second half of the year.
One of the things that Mike alluded to when we talked to is the competitive nature. As the market gets more competitive, because volumes could, in theory, ebb off a bit because of refinances not being as abundant, was it's going to become more competitive, and those that have lower costs, why, by whatever means, by efficiencies, technology, whatever, are going to have a decided advantage, and I think that's significant. Andy Schell, no one better to talk about efficiencies and at least the cost side of it than you. I got to tell you, when I was talking to Marina at one of the recent conferences, when she started talking about data, it was like watching a kid get excited about Christmas. She was talking about the new data being released. She just got the biggest smile and just got so animated. It was so fun to watch her. Anyway, Andy, you know her well.
I do. Hi, Marina. Great to have you on Lickin' & Lending.
Thanks.
So I'm going to do my best to not do the total geek out because Marina and I totally could go there and we would be unintelligible. Because I really would like to talk about intangible revenue, but we're not even going to go there. So I think that I have two key questions, but I'm going to start with the kind of the bigger picture question. And that is, you know, when we start talking about expenses, we start talking about value drivers, we start talking about relationships among revenue and cost and value drivers like volume or staff counts. And you got, just on the show, you've already mentioned a number of really important elements.
Yeah.
How do you condense it and consolidate it and turn it into a cartoon presentation, more or less, so that anybody can understand? So, you know, the top producing originator who now owns their own company, no experience in finance, no background in accounting. How do you take all this amazing nuggets of gold and show it to them in a way that they see what it is that you're saying?
Yeah. Well, pictures definitely help. It's easier to show pictures than a radio show because people understand bars going up over time. And so if the cost of originating, you see those bars going up. That certainly helps. But what we try to do, for instance, is we try to show cost to originate versus volume. We have one chart for that. And showing volume and where the volume is heading or where the originations are heading versus the cost to originate or profitability. So lots of pie charts, you know, try to break it down into little pieces. And I've learned over time it's better not to make the charts too complicated with, you know, four different variables on the chart because then folks get a little confusing. But, you know, we're trying to lead the witness, too, with variables that make sense. For instance, loan balances that are going up. We're at a steady high in terms of average loan balance at about $276,000. So showing that over time versus cost to originate is important, too, because we focus so much on processing, underwriting, and closing, and sales is a big part of it. As long as loan officers are being paid in basis points based on the loan amount, that really makes a big difference in terms of where the overall cost to originate is. So we try to do that. And one thing we're trying to do, too, is more segmentation, looking at different groups, because an IMB is not the same as a mid-sized bank or a credit union or community bank or a large bank. You know, MBA represents so many different segments of the industry. So it's important to present data that's specific to the segment you're speaking on, which is why now we have credit union networking groups and IMB networking groups, to try to bring the relevant data home to them. Another big difference that I've noticed is in terms of just geographic location. You know, you compare the Midwest to California, and there's such a huge difference. So what does $7,200 cost to originate really mean when California is at $8,000 and then the Midwest is at $6,000? So we're trying to really break down the pieces a little more than we used to do to make it more relevant to those different groups.
Sounds awesome. And everybody listening, charts and graphs help. That's funny, Marina. We'll talk about this some other time. My second PhD is actually in communications using graphical imagery to convey financial content. So we'll talk about that more.
Ooh,
hey,
yeah.
If you go to the next conference, you see Andy and Marina over there in the corner. They're just getting giddy on that. They're feeding off each other. So good. We've got to talk about the upcoming servicing conference, and there's so much coming out about
servicing. Absolutely.
I'm so excited. We get so caught up in all this stuff, and it's so good. We got a ton of questions. And listeners, I'm so sorry. Thank you for writing. I'm sorry we can't get to it all, but we've got to get to servicing, and we will have Marina back. Someone just said, please, with a lot of ease that I'd have her back soon. Great information, great content. A lot of people are responding. But let's talk about the servicing conference. It's coming up. What are the dates, and what are you focusing on?
February 23rd to 26th, we have a new name for our servicing conference. For so many years, decades, it's been called the National Servicing Conference. Kind of boring. So we are renaming it. It's the MBA's Servicing Solutions Conference and Expo 2020 in Orlando, February 23rd and 26th. That was a conscious decision to change the conference title to better match up with what we're trying to accomplish, which is more interactive sessions, more small groups, sort of ask the expert sessions, focused on very specific needs. Again, segmentation. We're going to have different experts, for instance, representing different parts of the country, California, New York, Florida, and so forth.
Wow.
So we think that that'll really help draw people to the conference. And technology is going to be a big topic of conversation. Goodness, with all the cybersecurity issues out there, wiring fraud, et cetera. So technology is going to be a big issue. Of course, regulatory is always a big issue. And market updates. So definitely want you all there. Yeah, I can give you a sneak preview if we have time, David.
Yes.
I can give you a sneak preview as to what we're going to be talking about. My colleague Joel Kahn and I will be doing a market update. And so we've talked a lot about originations, but what do things look like on the servicing side? Well, for those who follow our press releases, we have some really, really great data out there in terms of delinquencies. You know, we're at a near 25-year low in terms of the delinquency rate, which is great for the cost of service dropping off. So that's all good news. We continue to watch FHA delinquencies just because more recent cohorts have a bit of a higher or a lower, rather, credit score and some other risk factors. So we're paying attention to FHA. But again, whether you look at FHA, conventional VA, we're at pre-recession levels, which is great news. Now, the only thing that's not going so well on the servicing side is the fact that we have MSR impairments in 2019 related to the heavy prepayment activity starting in the second quarter and into the third quarter. So on a financial basis, we saw this big hit to net servicing financial income for those especially that didn't hedge their servicing rights. But operationally, if you look at high loan balances, which help out your service fees, and the expenses dropping off as folks have gotten through the last, you know, over the last 5 years have managed to operationalize all the national servicing standards. So we see a drop in direct cost of service associated with just managing all the regulatory changes and also the low delinquency rate. So operationally, we're looking really good. But again, in terms of the valuation of the servicing rights changing, that, you know, was a big financial hit for services financial statements.
And one of the questions I have that just came in, I know Andy could talk to this, but I want your perspective on it, and that is, why did it come as such a surprise, and why were people not hedging their servicing? This is something that could have been managed. Any thoughts on that?
It's expensive. Hedging mm-hmm. servicing rights, you have to be of a certain level of sophistication, or you have to hire someone from outside your organization to hedge your servicing rights. And, you know, again, I don't want to get my boss in trouble, Mike Fratantoni, but when you think a year and a half ago, and what our forecast
right.
was in terms of interest rates,
I know.
it certainly, you know, the spring of 2019 was certainly not what folks thought a year before that, or even six
right.
to 9 months before that.
And Mike does such a good job of predicting interest rates. And, I mean, it's an impossible
job.
It's predicting whether most of parts of the country is. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I appreciate the effort and all the work that they go to. They're very conscientious to do it. But, yeah, that was ouch for a lot of people who were looking at that. But there was times to make adjustments along the way. And I think there are some unique challenges for IMBs versus the regulated world. Are you going to be getting into some of that at the conference?
Absolutely. Those particular challenges, well, first of all, we all live in the regulated world. IMBs are regulated,
yeah, that's
for
I
sure.
Yeah,
I got to set
right.
that straight.
Yeah,
we've got to do that. I'm representing
right.
MBA
yeah.
here. But definitely at both conferences, whether it's the IMB conference or the servicing conference, but particularly the IMB conference, we have a bunch of sessions dedicated to unique challenges associated with independent mortgage banks. So as we know on the origination side, independent mortgage banks now in terms of market share represent over 50% of purchases, but also over 50% of refinances. And so they've made a big push, particularly in the FHA space, in terms of gaining market share. And they've also taken over a bigger share of servicing altogether, particularly government
yeah.
servicing. And so among some circles, and this is well documented, among some circles, there's, you know, a level of concern, well, will these independent mortgage banks have the liquidity and the capital to withstand a downturn,
right.
particularly if they're holding FHA mortgage servicing rights. And so there's going to be some discussions on that. We have folks from the counterparty risk groups at Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie coming speaking about that at the IMB conference.
Yeah.
And it's also, MBA is really focused on, well, what solutions are available? You know, the Federal Home Loan Bank financing, would that be available to
mm-hmm.
IMBs? Can we change the acknowledgement agreement to make warehouse lenders feel better about offering help, you know, financing for the servicing advances and potential Ginnie Mae early buyouts? Again, this is all kind of conjecture. It's in the, you know, stress testing phase. But we're not in a stress situation right now. Again,
right now.
The economics are looking very good. Unemployment rate is low. But it's something that's on the minds of those, particularly at Ginnie Mae. So we'll be spending a lot
yeah.
of time talking about that.
Yeah, Gregory Keith is going to be speaking there. Really interested in
mm-hmm.
hearing what Greg has to say again on this topic. Ginnie Mae is probably the most concerned about it. Well, they're all the GSEs are concerned about it, but a lot going on. Folks, we've run out of time, but Marina, thank you so much for coming in. You're on your day off on a holiday, MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day.
See, my parents came to D.C. in the 1960s, so we definitely want to honor Martin Luther King on this day. So thank you for having me, and thank you, Martin Luther King, too.
Yeah, so grateful for great leaders, amazing leaders, and one of those at the top of our list is especially the person we're honoring today. So happy Martin Luther King Day, and kudos to he and the leadership he brought. More than kudos. That just sounds so light for what he did and went through and the ultimate sacrifice he gave. So, Marina, thank you so much. I love your passion
for
research, Marina. And you're just, it's so much fun to find someone who just gets into it so much. And you do. And I'm just so grateful for you and everyone at the MBA for what they do to make us have a healthy, vibrant housing finance system here in America. So thank you to you, Marina, as well as to Marcia and Bob and the whole team. for all that they do. Thank you so much. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors as we exit the program: Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, the MBA, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, as well as Ainsworth Advisors, Knowledge Coop, Mobility RE, Celebrity Home Loans, as well as Velma, Vidyard, BenderSurf, and AI Assist. Of course, always thank you to Alice, Andy, Joe, and Alan for their contributions. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.